Hello, and welcome to Manga Splaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by Debbie Oki, David Brothers, Christopher Woodrow Butcher, and myself, Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangasplaining.com. This week, we're talking about Sweetness and Lightning, which was a manga series written and illustrated by Guido Amigakure, originally serialized in the seinen magazine Good Afternoon. It follows a widowed teacher named Kohei and his precocious daughter, Tsumugi, as they navigate life and one integral ingredient to life, food. See, Kohei isn't much of a cook, and he feels like he's depriving his daughter of something essential by always serving her ready-made meals. A chance encounter with one of the students from his school, a young woman named Katori, leads him to take up cooking, and it prompts Katori to do the same, learning from the shadow of her absent chef mother. North American edition is put out by Kodansha, and today we're discussing Volume 1 after I chose it as the winner in our classic 4 First Chapters episode. So yeah, this is what we're doing. I'm hosting. Look at this.
Yeah, thanks for hosting. Thanks for picking up the duties on this one there, buddy. I'm so excited for you to talk about Sweetness and Lightning.
Oh, thanks. So like I mentioned, we picked this based on the first chapter, which we read previously. And I think I was the one amongst us who liked it the most. So my question is really, do you like this book more after reading the whole first volume instead of just the first chapter? I'm going to start with Deb today instead of doing Christopher like I've always done in the past.
Well, I had read this first volume before, so I always kind of liked it. I just never read the rest of the series, so okay. I'm not sure where it goes. It is really cute. It's, you know, like we had our dining table where there was, you know, the guy who doesn't cook and the kid and the person who does know how to cook. You know, it's a very similar dynamic, but I think there's more, I feel like with Sweetness and Lightning, there's more practical cooking instructions. Mm. But it's not at the level of Oishinbo, which is overwhelming, right?
Yeah. It's not like just religiously following the recipe. It's just it's done through the storytelling, which I liked. Mm-hmm.
I guess always my question with a food manga is, did it make you hungry reading it?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes. Nice.
I've been really struggling with my vegan lifestyle lately, and reading this did not help that struggle. So, yeah, definitely made me hungry.
Yeah, that hamburger steak looked pretty good.
Yeah.
It is cute. I guess there's one thing I guess I'll bring up later is this type of story. I have a little bit of PTSD about where I call it bunny drop syndrome.
Yeah, you mentioned that on a previous episode, and I don't think we should ever read Bunny Drop, but also, yes, please explain. Well, sorry, you said you were going to bring it up later. Like, yeah.
There's a point where it's like, and we've mentioned it in the first chapter, it's like, there is a trope where it could easily go down the road of being an inappropriate relationship between a teacher and a student, but they address it right up the front. Now, that's a caveat because I haven't read the whole series, so I don't know how it goes. But, you know, there's that, I feel that tension. Like, oh my God, please don't. But other than that, I thought it was really adorable. You know, the part where, you know, he's trying to be a good dad and the daughter is really cute. I got where the sweetness comes in. But does anyone know where the lightning comes in? What's the lightning in the story?
I mean, for me, it's all through the daughter. Like in every moment when she's like stunned by the food, which are beautifully drawn faces, that always felt to me like the lightning, like that, you know, like the heavens part. And all of a sudden, all these ingredients have come together to create this reaction.
Oh, but I might be overthinking that.
I like
that.
David, what did you think of this versus just the first chapter?
So I have like a short story to explain how I feel about it. When we did the original episode, we just read the first chapter, and in my head we were like, oh, we're going to follow up with Sweetness and Lightning Volume 2 on this episode, even though we didn't finish reading Volume 1. So I bought Volume 2, started reading it, and I was like, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, they're too close already. There's like stuff going on. So I read 1.5 volumes of Sweetness and Lightning for this, and I did not finish volume 2 because I think it's pretty definitively not my bag, but it's like a very well told not my bag. Like the art's really good. Like you mentioned, the way she like fluffs up when like the food is happening. Yeah. Super great stuff. But it's like so saccharine that I had a hard time with it. And it's not even like, it's the bad kind of saccharine. It's doing exactly what it wants to do, like in the exact way that the author wants it to go. But it's too sweet for me. Like I found myself feeling kind of bad because I was like, this guy sucks at being a dad. And that's such an uncharitable thought for a manga about a guy trying to be a better father. You know? I'm like, why don't you try harder and then like intrude on this young lady's life? But like, there's a lot of simple pleasures in the book. There's some amazing drawings of food. And I don't know, I think like the craft is on a really high level, but it's like just outside of my comfort zone, so to speak. Whatever, I guess, discomfort zone, is that the best way to describe it? It's too comfortable for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I don't think I necessarily want 10 volumes of this. Like, as it, for me, it felt just kind of sweet enough. Like, I probably wouldn't have gone past volume 1, unlike you, who's a huge fan of the series. Kept going.
Yeah. I felt drawn.
Yeah. There are enough tiny little tension things that actually kind of make me maybe want to keep going, because it is super sweet, but it's also like, you know, as Deb pointed out, like, oh, is there going to be a weird relationship thing? What's the mom story? You know, there's some tragedy underneath all of this. But I do want to talk about the possible relationship stuff later. Chris, did you like this more after reading the rest of the volume?
Well, I don't have a short story like David does, but I do have a little bit of dance that I would like to perform about Sweetness and Lightning.
I keep telling you, this is a podcast. What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. One day my interpretive dance will shine through.
Yeah.
So I actually read the whole book when we did the one chapter. This is the one I cheated on because wanted to know, because I was just like, yeah, this is weird that a teacher and his student and his daughter are going to get together and cook. And that's what the whole manga is going to be about after it was recommended. And it was recommended as a very sweet manga. So I was a little bit worried about the bunny drop stuff too, because that kind of came out of nowhere in the bunny drop series, which was this cute story about this guy and his adopted daughter for like 9 volumes. Then the 10th volume was like, oh my God, recoil and horror, Stockholm syndrome.
Amazing.
Kind of. Yeah. It's anyway, but this doesn't feel like a direction it's going. And I get that because it actually super addressed that in, I think, chapter 3 or chapter 4, where it was just like, we're just going to talk about this thing where you're making food with your, like, one of your students. And it's just, I don't know. I like how thoughtful it is. And I like that it's portraying this dad as like super dedicated and super invested, but also hapless, like completely like useless, because he's just like thrown into the situation that he never expected to. The fact that it's drawn by at least someone who's using a masculine pen name is really interesting to me, because it's about this idea that, what do we expect women to be in charge of, and what do we expect men to be in charge of? And obviously from a Japanese perspective, the Japanese manga. And so it shows this guy who now has to do, you know, what are considered traditionally women's roles in Japan, which is cooking and cleaning. Like the first chapter is he cooks, he cleans, he like takes care of his daughter, goes to the park and does it all terribly. Like he's trying his best, but he's bad at all of it. And then he shows up at work and he can't do the work functions that are like the masculine functions that are expected of him, because he's got all these other like responsibilities loaded onto him. So I think it's really actually digging into the idea of gender roles in a real, real interesting way, by saying like, no, you can do this and we're just going to learn how. Just going to learn how to do this along with the audience, because Good Afternoon is a seinen magazine. So probably one of those like seinen magazines with like hard scare quotes where it's like 60% dudes, 40% ladies reading it, but maybe more. But honestly, I think it's really trying to address something very serious, but using the fluffiest style possible to like make it really approachable and not scare people off. It's like, look at this moe cute little girl. Like, you're going to keep reading this. You're not going to be scared of having to learn how to cook your own meals or do the laundry. Are you, young man? Like, this is, you're going to be okay, just like this hapless dad. So reading it, I really dug it for that aspect of it. It is really saccharine, like David's saying, and this isn't something I would ever have come to on my own, maybe, if someone hadn't suggested it in the comments on the blog. But yeah, I totally think the first chapter sets up the premise, and the rest of the first volume really expands on the premise in an interesting way. So
yeah,
full marks. It is exactly what it wants to be. And I do think it's doing something a little bit more than just being a cooking manga, in my humble estimation.
The gender role thing is interesting, because one of the bits I noticed was the fact that her mom is a chef who is absent because of, like, basically work stuff, providing for the family, which, you know, there's always been that weird thing where it's like, oh yeah, cooking is the woman's work. Being a chef is a man's job, and all the prestige that comes with it. Like, it's has always been such a very strange schism there. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that it's her mom that is basically the chef of her restaurant that she owns and knows everything about food and is also somewhat absent from her daughter's life in this moment, which is usually also like a story being told about, like, a father. So I found that interesting as well in terms of the gender roles.
Go for it. I'll bring it up later.
No, I was just agreeing.
Oh, no.
David,
please. Well, Christopher was talking about gender roles. I actually hadn't thought of it from that angle at all. And Chip's example came, like, right to my head as he was explaining it. And I think part of my problem with the dad, why I feel uncharitable, even though I know it's, like, a manga about him trying his hardest, is, like, I'm the son of a single mom. So, like, I was raised by my mom. I grew up doing a lot of stuff that he's struggling with. So I'm just like, dude, it's not that hard. Like, come on. And this is almost like son of a single mom privilege, maybe. It's a ludicrous concept. Because I think it's definitely doing what you guys are saying it's doing, where it's like, here's a twist on the gender roles. But I think because of my perspective on those gender roles, that it's kind of messing my suspension of disbelief a little bit. Mm-hmm. Huh. There's another manga. I think, Deb, you like Blue Lock, the soccer manga? That one, I feel like it's really well drawn, but it only works if you pretend that the Japanese women's national soccer team doesn't exist. And I have such a hard time with that, that it, like, messes with the book for me. This is kind of the same thing, where it's like my real life biases and various things are kind of messing with the story a little bit.
Normally, I'd explain what you meant by that in the show notes, but since we're actually talking here, what do you mean Blue Lock only works if you pretend the Japanese national women's soccer team doesn't exist?
It's basically, in Blue Lock, the Japanese men's national team, they're like the core soccer team, the emblematic of Japan, you know, pride of the nation, is rebuilding. And they're doing it through kind of a death game approach, where they have, like, several teams of, like, losers and winners and champions. They're all going to feud. And instead of dying, you know, like, they get to be on the big soccer team, kind of like a battle royale situation where it, like, narrows the field. And there's all these speeches about how, like, Japanese soccer's fallen off. It's not any good anymore. Nobody has any cool moves. And I'm like, the Japanese women's team just won, like, 4 years ago. Like, what happened? And they can't mention it during the story because it would break the story, I think.
Because
it suggests that the ladies' team, you have to pretend like they don't exist, because otherwise you can't do the, we need to rebuild Japan and regain our lost glory story, because the glory is there. It's just feminine, and that's not cool.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is, so was it a matter of timing? Like was the original manga started before?
Oh no,
it's brand new. Women's team?
No, it's pretty new.
It's brand new.
Wow. It's just aimed directly at, like, older teen boys.
Yeah, yeah.
There's, like, women in it when I took my break from the manga. But, like, great drawings, like, it's well told, but I'm just like, I can't, like, I like that team too much.
Yeah.
So for you, it's a core premise issue on both counts. Like, the idea that, like, this dude should not be this bad at doing, like, dad stuff. And that book, the core premise is like,
But I also get, like, we don't really get into very much. And there's a little bit in the first volume, but he's dealing with grief too.
You know, we don't really see that at all in this first volume.
I mean, you see the scene where he's like in front of the Butsudan, and unless you know it, it's a Butsudan, it just looks like he's talking to a TV, right? But it's a it's the shrine where his wife's picture is, and where they, you know, give incense and talk to the deceased. So you don't really get the sense of, in this first volume, and I just peeked ahead to the second volume, you don't really get a sense of him dealing with it. You know, like, and his wife obviously died very young. They weren't married that long. The daughter is young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's barely holding it together, but you don't really get that here. But at the same time, like, you know, like, I just spent, what, a week with my family, and I had to do a bunch of the cooking because my brother is an idiot in the kitchen.
I pray he never listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, and Deb prays he does.
He does. He needs to hear he needs to hear the truth, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, even if I tried to be really nice about it, like, here's how you cut an onion, and here's how you make this. This is very simple to make. You know, like, even if I tried to do the, you know, like, kotori, like, and then you do the cat paw, and then you cut the daikon into even pieces. Ain't happening. I would just barely get the daikon out of the fridge and get a knife out. And he says, what? Call Domino's.
to be fair, Domino's is amazing.
That's true.
You're only saying that because you're a vegan now, and
I'm much bigger in your mind about it. That is true.
So anyway, I've been saying, like, the gender thing is real. Like, my brother grew up thinking he never had to learn how to cook.
Yeah.
And like, I think we've mentioned the manga Cooking Papa a little bit.
Yeah.
That's not available in English, but it was about a guy who has a family, and then his wife has a career. He learns how to cook, and there's probably a whole articles about how this was so amazing to show, you know, Japanese men that you two belong in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Like, what? Okay.
I think this book would have been a bit more successful if, they kind of showed him dealing with grief more, but also show him being in over his head more than just, oh, I can't cook. Because if that's his only problem, because his daughter is, you know, suffers a little bit from, she's adorable, and she's, well, not perfect. She's not a bad kid by any stretch, and she doesn't, like, lose it. Like, the only time there's a problem is when he has to go to school to get her because she got in, you know, a fight.
Yeah.
Because, like, she felt like she'd done something wrong. And, like, so even that, like, she just didn't want to disappoint dad. Really, even that was like such a sweet thing, and not actually what would happen with a child at that age who was, you know, in that situation. So, but, you know, that kind of breaks the thing of, you want the reader to, like, just fall in love with that little girl. Isn't she perfect? Doesn't she deserve all the best? But if you made her a bit more real, would you lose the reader a little bit? Like, probably wouldn't lose us, but you might lose the kind of, maybe the core audience for something like this.
Yeah.
I wonder if we just want a different book. We want this book to be a different book.
Yeah.
Like, we want the one that deals more. We want the sad boy version. We want this one to deal with the grief. And like, the little girl's probably dealing with grief as well. And we don't get that at all. We get, like, please write a letter to mommy so that she can make this and send it to us. Is like, like a brutal way for, like if you really, like, think about it and take that section where she's like, she gets food and it's gross, like, and her dad's like, oh my God, I bought this at the store, I don't know how to cook. She's like, write to mommy and, like, let her know that I want this. And then she sees, like, steak or something on TV, hamburger steak. And it's just like, that's really brutal. Out of the rest of the context of the book, that sequence where she's like, tell mommy in heaven I need better food, is, like, heartbreaking.
When you put it like that,
It's the most successful sequence in the book when he's just like, has a nervous breakdown at her saying that to him, and, like, runs through the night to this restaurant where he said he could go to get real food that would be, like, delicious to cook, because he's out of options, right? And if you really look, let's take a step back, bits like that work super well at, like, really showing, but the fabric of the whole story is, we're an upbeat story that runs in a magazine that we want to keep continuing, because if we start telling, like, a maudlin weirdo story in Good Afternoon, it's going to get moved to a different magazine. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where I can see the commercial pressures pushing this story into a direction further away from what us as four 40-plus-year-olds want to actually read, right? And it's just we're different people than maybe the intended audience for this. And it's I don't think that there's anything wrong with us wanting that different kind of story. I actually don't think there's anything wrong with this story. Like, I think it's like a pretty solid 7.5 out of 10 kind of a thing. But all of our complaints about it seem to be like, we're not the target audience because we're not Japanese people living in Japan who are in their 20s and maybe 30s who are like learning to be like do things for ourselves for the first time. Like, David had to do that when he was 15. I had two parents that worked. I made probably 75% of my own meals, 80% of my own meals. Mom would have dinner like, I don't know, five nights a week, and then we'd do pizza or order in on another night. Like, I know how to cook because I had to know how to cook and not just make like pantry oatmeal. This does not, like, none of this guy's struggle relates to me in any way, but you could see who it's for, you can see why it's successful on those merits. But I think that we're different. Yeah. We're just different readers.
The level of cooking that they're doing here is not elementary entry level.
No, pretty advanced level. Well, that's the conceit too, is that she works for a restaurant that's super famous for being good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. I don't think I necessarily want it to be a different book. I just think they could have tweaked that just enough to make us recognize a bit more about the characters. That's all. Just to kind of help the story along.
Mm.
So there's a TV show that was recommended to me called Darth Marenghi's Dark Place. And there's a quote about how writers use subtext are cowards. Which I found really moving. And I think part of the thing here is that I think he's using very efficient, or rather the author, is using very efficient subtext for like native Japanese people who were live in the setting that we're watching. While for us, it might be much less effective subtext because we're kind of like, he's not sad enough to go running to a teenage girl's house to get dinner made. You know, like, you got to work up to that a little bit.
Yeah.
So maybe if there was a little more of that, I think I would have liked it a little bit more. But I think Christopher is right, is that like there's nothing wrong with it, it's just not violent enough for me.
there is always the danger of the knives, and she's like scared of cutting. A little bit of David in there for you. What David is like, just like, where's this going?
Knives. Flashback to terrible knife incident coming in a future volume. So all of that said, all of my defense that I just laid out, I think that both the little girl and the dad, like the hapless, scattered dad and the little, like, cute little girl, could be played by Muppets and it would not affect the story in any way. I think that they are so all over the place, like in almost every sequence, that they could be played by Muppets rather than real people. And I don't, and then you would look at it and go, yeah, that's totally actually in character for a Muppet. Their whole thing is like outsized and over the top. And like Kotori, like the daughter who's like the cook, seems to be the realist to me. Like, she seems like the most, like, she would be the guest star of the week that would come on, that the human that the Muppets interact with. Because they are a little bit like, and maybe we will get more of the dad's grief. Maybe we'll get more of the little kid being less an adorable Muppet that just does things that are like silly in future volumes. But this first volume, I kind of, to back to Chip's first question he asked, I kind of thought this whole book would go in a direction that was a more balanced version of, like, that first chapter showed that, like, okay, this is kind of, they are kind of hapless and they are kind of all over the place, but there also is like real trauma that he's dealing with that comes bubbling up real close to the surface in that one sequence. And we don't get any of the rest of that in the first volume. Like, all of it seems to get maybe a little sillier rather than a little bit realer. And I love the Muppets, don't get me wrong. But
I was going to say, most movies are better with the Muppets.
Right?
Sure. So maybe that's more to come. Like, I mean, setting a tone of kind of the light, you know, recipe of the week.
Yeah.
Might just be a solid instinct for a volume one of something like this, where there's hints throughout of kind of bigger issues. I will say, with the Muppet stuff, I think Katori's mom would be the Swedish chef then.
She would be. Oh. She's on TV. She's cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. I think I would like this a lot more if just Statler and Waldorf topped up like once or twice a volume, just to say a little bit and leave.
Just once to cut chapter. Through their meals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the first volume. Like, it's kind of like when we read Yotsuba, right? Mm-hmm. There's a certain tone that's set, but I feel like the real spice or the real mix hasn't been solidified yet. Like in volume two, because I read ahead a little bit, was like the father cooks something with stuffed bell peppers and he has to deal with her saying, "Ooh, this tastes horrible." Right.
Mm.
And then he has to deal with her picky eaterness. And then the, you know, Katori explains like, you know, little kids actually don't like bitter food. Like their palates don't like certain things. There's more things about parenting. Mm-hmm. Father and daughter don't necessarily get along like, "Oh my dad, you're the best and you can do nothing wrong." Like, I think that there's some friction that gets introduced. And I think as someone who doesn't have children, can only watch in wonder and horror as I watch my friends, you know, parent their kids, like, oh, trying to reason with these little humans can be very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they're always like, "I don't get it." And it's like, I feel you, man, but at least you can reason with your children. I cannot ask my cat, "Why did you throw up in the middle of the carpet?" You know, or
the answer is always the same.
Do you want to go out? You're just sitting by the door. You're meowing. I'm opening the door for you. And you're just sitting there. What do you want? Yeah. And like, obviously I talk to my cat, not even, you know, appreciating the fact that he cannot answer. But I try anyway. But I tell my friends, it's like, at least your kids will someday be able to tell you what's on their mind.
And it'll hurt your feelings so bad.
Oh, will they ever?
Kill you.
So in some way, Sweetness and Lightning, the latter volume, start getting into parenting problems, which I thought was interesting.
The most interesting part of this book to me was just the part that was like kind of teased, which is Katori's mom.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because you don't really know what to make of a character that's not there. And like, for the first part, I was just like, "Oh, does she even exist?" And then like, there will be like a handwritten note or whatever. And then eventually, like, there's the phone call.
She shows up on TV. That was great, actually.
Yeah, so, I know.
I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah. Well, sorry, you've watched enough Japanese TV, Deb, to know that, like, yeah, there's just, like, variety shows on 24 hours a day, basically. Like, of course she's got to show up on TV. Everyone gets to show up on Japanese TV at least once if you live in the country.
But wearing a schoolgirl outfit? What?
Well, that's the thing. Like it raised, I mean, it's such a quick scene, but it raised so many questions.
Yeah, it's good.
Because you're like, okay, she's off doing something as a chef or whatever. And then you're like, oh, it's a TV show. Okay. And then when you actually see her, like, she's young, happy, bright. She's listed as a cooking researcher on a quiz show, and she's wearing a sailor uniform. And Katori is, like, embarrassed for her that she's wearing the sailor uniform.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, so is the mom doing this, which isn't her passion? You assume it's actually just the cooking that's her passion because she needs the money? Or is it, like, a fame thing? Like, what... Like, there were so many questions there as to what this meant and why she would do it and be away from her restaurant. We've already kind of seen that restaurants in manga can just exist without customers or problems with money. But still, like, she basically has left her daughter, who doesn't know how to cook, alone and closed down the restaurant to go do this. And so... it just raises all these questions about what's behind these moves of the mother. Yeah. Well, I don't know. What did you guys think of that?
I thought that was odd, actually, because it would have made sense if the mother was overseas, you know, and therefore was absent.
The other manga trope.
Yes.
Someone the overseas mother.
And cannot be spoken to.
Yeah.
But the fact they share a house together and the mother actually makes a lovely breakfast for her once in a while. But somehow they don't interact.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very weird. And there's no animosity there either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, she's, like I said, she's embarrassed for her mother, but she's not really upset with her mom for not being there. Though maybe that comes later.
Context-wise, it did make sense to me, but like, I don't think it would make sense to a normal North American reader. Like I get why you guys are confused about it, but it's just like, you watch enough, like, I have friends that do that are like talent. Like they do TV stuff every once in a while. They get called in to do stuff like that, and it's just like, yeah, like I mean, okay, so I'm here. I'm going for restaurants in Taiwan. I'm like looking up opening hours, and it's like, this restaurant's only open Friday, Saturday. Like, really? Like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe? It's only open 3 nights a week out of, like, 7 days a week. And it's just like, yeah, the person who's running this restaurant is famous because I've heard of it. They only open 3 nights a week because they've got other shit going on, because they hit this level of fame where it's so easy to get into the Japanese entertainment industry that, like, now they have to do other stuff on the nights, or they have, like, 3 restaurants and they're in a... This is, like, their big restaurant, but then they go over and manage their, like, whatever restaurants, or, like, they have a TV appearance or a radio appearance, because radio is still huge, as we learned in Wave Listen to Me and that kind of thing. It doesn't... The cultural context of it, I think, would make perfect sense to a Japanese reader. Be like, oh yeah, if your restaurant is like big enough that you get featured on a couple of TV shows, suddenly, because there's so much food television in Japan, it like it dwarfs anything that we're doing in North America, that yeah, if you get featured 3 or 4 times, suddenly they start asking you to come on to their other programs and be like a guest host because you're this famous person who's been cooking at this restaurant, and now you can give your opinion on whatever the, like, you just have to fill 12 hours a day of people giving their opinions about things. And that's most of Japanese television. I'm not making this up. I'll link a video in a Chris Broad video that talks about Japanese TV in the comments that does a good job of explaining it. But yeah, the long and the short of it is. Yeah. Go ahead.
How can we get manga explaining on Japanese TV?
We have to just be in Japan. Literally, you just hang around in Japan long enough and someone will ask you to be on TV. So let's do it.
Let's pick that up.
I'm in.
Crew. Yeah, they just reopened. Nice. So, like, everyone book your tickets. We'll all go for Christmas and see if we can't get on we'll be the foreigners in the background of, like, a Christmas shoot or something like that. It'll be really great.
I'm down with that.
I love it.
I was going to say, when you were talking about restaurants that only open certain days, I want to bring up a San Francisco mystery called the Golden Gate Bakery.
Okay.
The Golden Gate Bakery is in Chinatown. It is famous for its egg custard tarts. It is rarely open. People love this place, but it is rarely open. So there is an actual website called, Is Golden Gate Bakery Open Today? And then you click on it and it either says yes or no. There is a Facebook group, Is Golden Gate Bakery Open Today? And when it is, the people will post, go, oh my God, the door's open. They're making egg tarts. Everyone run for the hills. You know, everyone run to Chinatown right now and go get some. So my little story at Golden Gate Bakery is one day I was like I had a little errand to run downtown, right by Golden Gate Bakery. And I went and looked and I said, oh, it's open. I have to try and get some egg tarts. And I go in and they say, no egg tart, only mooncake.
Oh.
Egg tart not till 11 o'clock.
Did you just sit there? You just sit there and wait?
And I just felt defeated.
How dare you?
And also they close at 10:59, so.
So I'm just saying, there are people who run businesses and they decided that they'd rather have a life.
Yeah.
But it's also, you can almost make as much money doing it during those times as you can by stretching out over a week. Like, so here on the island that I live on, it's small enough that there is no restaurant. There is a cafe that closes at 2. But there was like this on one of the farms, there was like kind of a food truck. And it was called like the Chuck Wagon. And whenever you drive by, like it just says it's closed. Like it's just closed. Like you're not allowed on the property. There's all these signs saying, you know, trespassers will be prosecuted, shot, whatever. It's like, and then we found out that they used to be open to the public. Then the guy just got tired of like the periods where there was no one, and then the periods where there was a rush, and he just had to like get off his ass and like make food to feed like 20 tourists that came through or something like that.
Mm.
And just always being on call. So he closed it to the public. And you have to call and get on his list to become a member. And he's calling it a private supper club, which is just a food truck. And basically he puts the list open on Thursdays to like put in your order for like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And as soon as his slots are filled up, he's done. So it's like the perfect business. Like, he's still probably making as much money, but he also knows, like, oh, I will make 20 hamburgers. Who wants one of the 20 hamburgers? And I'm like, so that's the way to do it.
Like a commissions list at a Comic-Con, almost.
That's exactly it. Yeah. That was like the time I sat next to Bruce Timm at a show, and he just put a little list down, walked away, and they were just like, got in line, wrote down what character they wanted until the list was full, and then he just came back, drew them all. Perfect.
Nice.
So obviously we've digressed a little bit here, but
that's what we're famous for.
I will say Katori's chef mom and her appearance, like I said, it raised all these questions for me. It was kind of the most interesting part of Volume 1 because it just felt like such a mystery, and there was more mystery after we see her. But it answered one question for me, which was, will there be this horrible teacher-student relationship? And as soon as I saw the mom, I'm like, no, there won't be.
Yeah.
Because they've introduced the mom as a cheerful, good character that doesn't have an antagonistic relationship with her daughter. If the mom was introduced as, like, you know, the wicked stepmother from Cinderella or something like that, you'd be like, oh, okay, like, forget it. So I was like, okay, that kind of solves that for me. Like, because I was worried too that it might become icky. But it feels to me more now like going forward, there might be an unrequited thing and it's going to get sorted out at some point. And then she'll kind of move on or figure it out. Maybe he'll have a thing with the mom. Maybe there'll be some weird tension there. Maybe that's just my fanfic in my head already.
The mom is the best case scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about reading ahead because there is volume 12.
Okay. Oof.
Just getting that last one. It's like, okay, does it get icky? Because if it doesn't get icky, then I can feel good about reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a manga up by Square Enix called Beauty and the Feast, which is about a boy who is a baseball player, his high school baseball player, and this woman who is a widow who likes to cook. So she decides to cook for him because, you know, he's an athlete and he needs to eat good food.
He's just eating constantly. He is just like a 15-year-old boy who just will not stop eating to like put it all into baseball energy.
Yeah.
And she's extremely busty. So there's a part where it's like, I had that tension, like, oh my God, please no, please no, please no, please no. And then my Japanese friends are, no, don't worry, man. Doesn't go there.
Oh, great.
You can read it as you like, and it won't go there. It's just about eye candy of this busty woman making food. That's all it is. Like,
all right.
But perfect. That's so much of manga is like that commercial concern, like, you want to do this thing where, like, this woman, it's like a cooking manga. A woman's going to be cooking. She's got something going on where she's like, I need to feed this neighbor boy who's, like, maybe a little neglected. Sure. But we have to make it sell. How busty can we make this lady? How busty can she get? And she's busty. Like, I'll put it in the show notes. It is crazy. But it's the same thing with, I feel like, Sweetness and Lightning, where it's like, all right, we got to make this sell. How cute can we make this adorable girl? Like, this, like, Muppety little girl. Just, like, doing moe things and having the big eyes and little teardrops and whatever. And it's like, we've done it. She's like genetically cutely perfect or something. Like it's ridiculous. This like drawing of this girl and like all the way through all the faces she makes is kind of silly, but it's great too.
So you're saying the little girl is the tits of this manga?
Yeah. Wow. You know what? Sure. The G-rated
is speechless right now, trying to find a response.
I got nothing. They fulfill the same role as far as I'm willing to go down that path.
I'm going to try to rescue this and make you support volume 2.
Way to go, Chip. You just made this the not safe for work episode.
Yeah. You meet one of the high school girl's friends in volume 2, who like hears a rumor that like, oh, the teacher's hanging out. Well, she doesn't hear a rumor. Someone like literally tells her and she goes to check it out. And so she walks in on them while they're cooking together. And it's one of those like, oh, this isn't what it looks like kind of moments. But before they get to the, this isn't what it looks like she looks at the two of them cooking. And she's like, oh, and then she looks at the kid and she's like, oh, and then she's like, what is going on? And it sidesteps the romantic awkwardness entirely. Like, it's never like, oh, are you two dating? It's like, oh, something weird's happening, but I don't know what. Mm-hmm. And then the very next page is her explaining. There's like a little explanatory caption. And she's like, you should have told me, and now I'm going to help you cook. So like their posse's getting bigger. Okay. And you're kind of learning more about the girls as kind of they interact this way. It's like another angle on the character.
Yeah, like so just that. Digging into this idea and manga inflation syndrome. It's like Rama. They just keep introducing new potential brides or husbands for Akane and Ranma.
We meet a jumbo too. Yeah,
we need a jumbo.
You meet a jumbo in volume two.
Oh, there's a meet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a character.
And he's kind of like a jumbo plus. What's the other guy from Yotsuba? The enemy?
Yeah, the mean one.
Oh,
the
Yanda.
Yeah, it's kind of the same guy. Yanda plus jumbo.
It's true.
Because she sees Tsumugi in the park, like some guy offers her a cigarette and she takes it and she's like, what is going on? Did she get kidnapped? What's happening? And of course, it's, you know, Tsumugi's dad's friend. Like she says, you can't eat the paper, right? Because it's a candy cigarette. That's the joke. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, it has to have gotten spicy and interesting to go on for 12 volumes, right? Like, it's not just, you know, like laid back camp, which is just like, we're going camping. We're having a lovely time.
Yeah.
Nothing really happens, but we're having a lovely time. You know, it's just kind of like the equivalent of like watching that they have like, there's a thing on HBO Max where you can just watch this loop of Ghibli backgrounds with soothing music.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of like that. It's just like nothing happens, but don't you feel relaxed now? Life is lovely.
So my guess for volume 12, like if it keeps escalating as it is now, is do you know Ortolan, the bird where you have to cover your face to not offend God while you eat it?
No, what's that?
You guys heard about this?
Oh,
it's
okay.
Like this French delicacy that sounds horrible. You're supposed to eat it in one bite. It's horrific. But my guess is they make that in the last volume, and that's like the escalation.
Oh my God, David. That is, oh my God.
Way to David this up.
Yeah. I'm just saying, cigarettes in volume two, like it's a very sharp spike.
This could be so amazing, right? You get like, just grab a whole bunch of the really sweetest, nicest manga, and then David it up. And see what happens. Like
we would make most,
it would be the most amazing doujinshi series. Right? Like the David collection of make it darker. Make it this. Like,
we have to commission that doujinshi. We have to commission the Ortolan final chapter of Sweetness and Lightning. Sort of an eyes wide shut, everyone comes to the supper club and sits down. Anyway, sorry.
Well, there's a manga called Batum, right? That has like two endings. Like there's one called the dark ending and one called the light ending. And you can choose which ending you want.
Gross.
Uh-huh.
My favorite one of those is We Never Learn has like eight endings. It's a harem manga where like a guy, there's a nerd, there's several women that like him for reasons no one can really explain. And in the end of this one, he gets with all of them. Like everyone gets an ending, a good ending. And it's like, they announced the end of the series, then a year and a half later, it finally ends after like 40 chapters of fan service. Amazing.
Smart.
That is, you made so much money.
It's like not sticking to your guns to such an extent that you're sticking to all new guns.
You know? You're sticking to all new guns.
But I can't choose what this ending's going to be, so we're going to do all of them.
Good for him.
Man.
Good for him.
It's amazing.
Has anyone ever done that in American comics to that extent?
Danger Club, actually, not to that extent. That extent's like wild. But there's an image book called Danger Club by Landry Walker and the recently passed Eric Jones. It's sort of like a Teen Titans post-apocalypse riff. And the endings are different in the trade paperback and the comics because they wanted like a different vibe for the different formats. Sort of like a Crisis on Infinite Earths thing. Yeah, so it's really cool.
That's smart.
Also, it's a really good story. Like, you'd think Grim Teen Titans is not, like, a fun time, but they have such heart, I guess, is the best way to put it. I really enjoyed reading it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Chip, you hosted this episode, and it went completely off the rails. How do you feel about that?
I consider myself not really the host. I think you're the host.
Oh, come on. You're the host of this one. You did the introduction.
His name is on
good.
The spreadsheet.
So. Yeah, that's true. It's on the spreadsheet. I think it went well. I think it's one of our best episodes yet. It came in under time. Yeah, I mean, my one final question for all of you is whether or not you'd want to kind of keep reading this after volume one, or in David's case, volume one and a half.
I'll lead off. I don't want to, but I like it enough to recommend to different people I know who will probably love it in a way that like I'm apparently emotionally incapable of. Like the execution is really sharp. Like the cute stuff is legit cute. Like the drawings of the little girl, she might as well be from a like a whole other comic sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a good vibe. Like it's really positive. It sidesteps the grossness in a way that I really appreciate. Like it doesn't make it like a teasing, like will they, won't they thing. Even if they end up not doing it, it's just like, this isn't that story. Like the store is closed.
And they say it in so many different ways too. Like there's no getting around it, which I think is great.
You know, it's waterproof as far as that goes. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But yeah, very much like very good, very not for me, which is kind of makes it kind of fun to read for me because I'm always trying to like figure out why I don't like things, why I really like things. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty much like Christopher said, just core premises aren't quite my bag, but everything else kind of is.
Yeah. Yeah. Deb, how about you?
Well, I admit I read volume one and it was pleasant enough, but I wasn't motivated to keep reading. And that kind of says something a little bit like it. I am the ultimate impulse reader. Like if something grabs me, I will go and I'll go read everything. I'll buy 20 something volumes if I have to. And this one just somehow didn't grab me, even though I like food manga, even though I generally like, you know, kind of nice, like I love What Did You Eat Yesterday? And I love, you know, books like that. But the I think one of the things with this book is that the underlying drama in back of it didn't grab me enough. And I think as I read volume two, it started to pick up and I thought, oh, okay, maybe, you know, it's more interesting because like you see some friction between Tsumugi and her dad and you see some more characters being introduced. So maybe it gets, it picks up steam and starts to find its groove. So I'm willing to investigate to go a little bit further. But in general, the other thing that I thought was interesting about volume two is what they started cooking some things that were not your typical introductory Japanese recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started to intrigue me like, oh, squid and taro stew? Never heard of that, you know, kind of intriguing to me. But like, what did you eat yesterday? I've actually cooked a couple of things from that book and they've been pretty good.
Yeah.
So, and then what I like about What Did You Eat Yesterday is that there's always this underlying drama of, you know, this gay couple getting older and what they go through. But it's never stops being kind of a slice of life and fun. So I like, for some reason, that hits the spot more for me. But I appreciate what Sweetness and Lightning is starting to do, starting from the second volume, which is getting into how do you parent a kid? How do you deal with when they do something wrong? How, I mean, it's never going to always be, you know, kisses and hugs, right? Like there's a scene in volume two where they go to a fair and then Tsumugi gets separated. And the dad gets really mad at her. And then he has to deal with, you know, them being mad at each other. Like, she's like, oh, like she cries, like, you know, why'd you scold me? And I think it's really interesting to, as a parent, to realize you're not going to be your kid's friend all the time. You know, they're not going to like you all the time. And you shouldn't strive for that, you know? So that kind of thing is fascinating to me, even though clearly my eggs are not gonna hatch. Nothing's, no kid type action is ever gonna happen for me. I can just look at it like, fascinating. Is that how they exist on that planet?
Yeah.
So it's interesting for me, but it's a little, it's not something like I feel super passionate about, right? It's just, I can read it with that thinking like, oh yeah, parenting, hard.
The end.
And Chris, would you keep reading?
I have a friend, and I will not name them. I will not out them, just in case. But they gave up on the X-Men books at a certain point because it's just like, where am I going to put all these X-Men comic books?
Is this me?
And so, but the, no, this is why it's not you. They switched to reading Wikipedia issues synopses because it was just like, I don't like, especially when the like X-Men has good writers and artists and then bad writers and artists, but it's still the same thread that has been woven since basically Claremont took over. And sometimes they go a little bit before the Claremont stuff. And he just like, these are just people that have been in my life for 15 years. I want to find out what they're up to, but I don't want to pay like, if you want to collect the X-Men books, $45 a month for the privilege. I want to just like, oh, what are Bobby and Jean up to? Oh, Jean's dead again. Oh, okay. Oh, she's back. Okay, good. Like, so he just reads the synopsis.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, he just wants Facebook status updates on the X-Men. He wants
Facebook status updates on the X-Men. And he gets it because within moments of an issue coming out, usually Tuesdays now, like before it's even out, someone's writing a synopsis and putting it on Wikipedia of what happens in that issue. And that's how he keeps up with the X-Men now. And that's the way in which he wants to engage with the X-Men now. I want that for this book. I don't care about the individual. And in fact, the individual chapters make me like the book less. But I just want to know that, like, oh, there is a chapter that where he deals with his grief and it's all about that. Or there is a chapter where, like, they explore the mother-daughter relationship between Kotori and her, like, famous mom and, like, how she's getting away from... Like, I want to know what happens to these people, but I don't want to, like, hang out with them to do it. It's just awful. Like, but it's how I feel about it. Like,
all right.
Yeah, I want to know where their stories end up, but I can clearly see that, like, this has turned into a book that is successful, and so we've just got to have infinite chapters until it becomes unprofitable, at which point we'll get a real ending, and maybe, like, tiny bits of character development that go through, because you can't... Ultimately, this book can't change until it's going to be over, because if it changes, it might become unpopular in the middle of the change, and then it would just be automatically ended. And it's just... I've talked about this before, but I find myself just butting up so hard against the commercial aspects of manga sometimes, in the same way that I did with superhero books, where it was just like, and I've talked about this before, but like, yeah, there's like one book where I was just like, oh, this is what superhero comics are, and then I was done, and it was like, it's fine. I still like to read comics that are good, usually miniseries, something with like a beginning, middle, and end that tells a story. So usually something out of continuity, like an Elseworldsy kind of a thing, like Chip did with my Spider-Man Life Story, kind of a deal, right? But that's the same thing with manga. Like, I want something with a beginning, middle, and end that resists market forces. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think there's enough manga being made now for me in that way that, like, great, this can still exist. It's even part of the, like, I love What Did You Eat Yesterday, which is a book that Deb just brought up, which is about, like, but it's literally about two gay dudes in their 40s just, like, trying to figure their way out and what they're going to do as they get older and dealing with their parents who are getting older, even older as well. And being stubborn and whatever. And it's like, oh, that's exactly where I'm at with my life right now. So like reading this is really comforting, but I don't have to give it any thought whatsoever. Like it's just like a thing that happens and that's it. And I'm not this like dude who's like, who's newly single dad in his 30s with a kid. Like that is so far away from my life. Like I want the best for him. I want to find out what happens, but I don't care. Like on a day-to-day basis, I don't want to be in his life. So
God, I don't want to read anything that comes close to my life. I just want to read about kids and tits.
Oh God. Not in the same book, thankfully.
There goes the age rating for this.
Oh, different books. Different books, Chris.
Yeah.
David, could you bleep Chip? Just like the whole episode, like a conceptual episode where every time, like, welcome to Mangasplaining. I'm Chip Zdarsky. And then it's just us talking in between beeps, conceptual Mangasplaining episode. Yeah.
3 out of 4.
All right. Well, okay. As for me, I would say I probably wouldn't read the next volume. Okay. So we're going to go to commercial. And when we come back, I guess we'll do some shout-outs. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, sounds good. We'll be back in a second.
Why might you want to learn a new language? For some of us on Mangasplaining, we use our knowledge of Japanese on the podcast to compare the English editions of manga to the Japanese. And honestly, reading more manga natively in Japanese, or bande dessinée in French, or webtoons in Korean, it's definitely a dream, and a great way to get there might be Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is a trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert in language learning for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Rosetta Stone offers fast language acquisition, immersing you in a language with no English translations, an intuitive process, and it's designed for long-term retention. It uses true accent technology to give you feedback on your pronunciation, and it's convenient with desktop and smartphone app options for offline learning. It's also an amazing value. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Mongosplaining learners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. All right. It's that time that everyone craves, which is which manga and anime is Deb consuming this week? AKA shout outs. Deb, you're up first.
Oh, I have many.
Oh, good, good.
Mm.
So, all
right.
In the theme of this book, this episode, I went to a friend's wedding last week in LA, and the hotel I was staying at in downtown was around the corner from this place called The Last Bookstore. I had never heard of this place before, and it is amazing. It is so cool. It's basically like a two-story thing where it's just this beautiful and airy but jam-packed full of books place that sells both new and used books. It's really artistic and fun, very cozy. I picked up a book there called Korean-American Cooking Comics.
Oh, neat.
Nice.
It is published by an LA comic store called Secret Headquarters. And it's this really cute series of little comics about a couple and the little bit how to cook some of Korean food.
Huh. Awesome.
It's super charming. It's a little hardcover book. I've been watching a lot of Korean dramas, as you know, and there's always lots of food that happens in Korean dramas. And I think, I have never eaten that before. What is this orange rice cakes that they're all craving? Mm. What is this hangover soup in which they must have all the time, because everyone in Korean dramas drinks till they're comatose.
Yes, yes.
So this is a part of my little journey of trying to understand what are they eating in these TV shows. And it's very cute, and it's done by, I think, an LA couple, so I'm very glad I picked it up. The other thing I wanted to recommend, and I recommend you guys all watch this, is a series called, it's on Viki, called Sleeper Hit. It's based on a manga about a young woman who used to be a judo champion, but she gets injured and she goes to her second choice of a career, which is to become a manga editor.
Hmm.
And it is incredible. It's 10 episodes. And it takes you into the world of publishing manga, like in a way that I've never seen before. It's super smart and fun. There's a scene where you see where all the manga that isn't sold gets pulped.
Oh.
It's kind of amazing. They talk about the battles between the sales department and the publishing department. They talk about manga magazines getting canceled. They talk about an older artist who is getting all these internet comments that he's lost his touch. There is a new artist who can't draw.
Too relatable.
Wow. Yeah.
He inherently knows how to tell a good story. Like, so if it reminds you of like Attack on Titan, and there's a girl who draws really great, beautiful BL manga at Comedia, and then she gets tapped to do a novel adaptation. Everything you'll watch on this, and it tells the story from the salespeople's point of view, the bookstore seller's point of view, the artist's point of view, the assistant's point of view, that we've all talked about, but it's really smartly done. And the main character, unlike many main characters in a lot of these shows, she is enthusiastic and bright and smart, but not inept. Like, usually, like, oh, you know, the bright young ingenue is usually, you know, like clumsy and keeps getting into trouble. No, it's like, in this case, she is enthusiastic and positive, but she has a fresh point of view and a love for the medium that allows her to bring fresh solutions that the more jaded editors couldn't do. So I found it to be a really uplifting show. I really love it. There's a manga series, cool. I think it's Big Comic Spirits, which will never come in English because of 18 volumes, whatever. But it is in French. So anyway, I highly recommend. I've been chatting it up all week. I love it.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Chris?
We'll put the link for that in the show notes. I was just thinking if I've consumed anything, and it's like, no, I've just been shopping. I've literally just, I didn't own a plate before yesterday, and now I own a plate as we finally were able to go out and buy plates. So
no wonder you like Sweetness and Lightning so much.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I started from zero. I'm learning how to do everything in a different language. John Oliver just started putting up new episodes of This Week Tonight on YouTube, and I've been watching that, and I feel increasingly disassociated from things that he is complaining about. So it's probably a good sign that I am watching it to like, every week it's like, this is what you should be mad about this week. And it's just like, okay, I hadn't really thought to be mad about that, but thank you. I'm glad that I am mad about that thing in an entertaining way. This Week Tonight with John Oliver. So throw up the most recent one in the show notes.
All right. And David?
So mine is going to be ludicrous, I guess, is what we're doing today. There's one movie that features Jake Gyllenhaal and Jack Palance. Do any of you know what it is?
Jack Palance? Really?
Yeah.
That would be City Slickers.
Amazing. Yes. Chip Zdarsky, ladies and gentlemen. So when I was a kid, I loved City Slickers. There was like this little host of like kind of funny action westerns that I liked a lot. To where I didn't even see like a real western until years later. And while I work during the day, I like to rewatch old movies like from when I was a kid or whatever. So I watched City Slickers this week and I had an unexpectedly emotional time watching it.
Oh, wow.
Because one of the first things that happens is Billy Crystal's like, oh no, I'm about to turn 39. And I looked up at the TV, like the Kill Bill sirens going off in my head, because in November, I'm turning 39.
Oh, I described this.
Wow.
I described this all 40 plus. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I aged you by 2 years. Fine.
It averages out, I think. But I probably had the most emotional experience watching City Slickers anyone's ever had. Because I was like, oh, this is a midlife crisis movie. I somehow did not know that midlife crises happen in your late 30s. I thought it was like a 40s, 50s thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like checking myself against Billy Crystal and like, you know, kind of translating the 80s, like, here's what a man is all about thing to like 2022. It was still a really funny movie. I think I'm doing pretty well in terms of like being an adult. Like, I don't feel too crisis bound. And yeah, City Slickers streaming on Netflix right now.
So did you immediately go and watch City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold?
No, but I thought about it because I forgot that John Lovitz is in it. He replaces one of the actors.
Oh.
And I liked him a lot when I was a kid, too.
That's amazing.
Yeah. How about you? Did you have anything this week? Anything good?
Oh, my shout out was the shout out that you shouted out to me in our group Slack, which is Nick Kroll's stand-up special, Little Big Boy, which came out on Netflix, I think, a week or two ago. And it's super funny. Nick Kroll's the kind of guy, he just pops up in so many things, and he's always like one of the funniest parts of whatever he's in.
Yeah.
And I've never actually watched a stand-up, and it was super, super funny. Like, he's kind of a master of voices as well, and he does an amazing Jason Statham throughout the special, which killed me every time he did it. Yeah, it's quite good. I highly recommend it.
Andrew and I were watching Big Mouth, and we really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think we're caught up on the newest season, but I would actually totally watch a Nick Kroll stand-up special. How does it compare if you, like, you've only seen him really doing his, like, child self in Big Mouth?
I haven't watched Big Mouth because I don't care for animation.
Oh, you don't care for animation. I forgot. That's the one of the themes of the show of manga. I totally forgot.
But I've seen him and John Mulaney kind of do characters on a variety of forums, and this is a good extension of that, but also gives you kind of an insight into him as a person, which you don't really kind of know much about him because he doesn't really talk a lot about himself in his press appearances. So you kind of get to see him as an emotional man, which is quite sweet.
Yeah. It's great because he, like, there's no nice way to say this, but like, he looks like a dick, you know? Like, you see him, you're like, oh, of course that guy's a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
But he's such, like, he's got such a sensitive sense of humor that he sticks the landing on a moms are annoying joke, like, multiple times in this special. Like, he's just such a good writer.
Wow.
Yeah. He's definitely, he's very good at weaving a tale.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize he was that good at stand-up. So, yeah, definite recommendation from me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Cool. All right. We did it. We nailed it. Another episode of Mongosplaining. Can't believe I hosted and survived the experience. Thanks for going easy on me. This has been Mongosplaining Episode 80, Sweetness and Lightning, by Guido Amigacore. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing Division Chief Kusakushima by Kenshi Hirokane. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find one near you at comicshoplocator.com, or check out your local library for print and digital lending options. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mongosplaining.com, and check out our newsletter and digital publishing endeavor at mongosplainingextra.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.